you've landed inside Launch Street, the Business Innovation Podcast, where we interview top innovators out there shaking things up so you can innovate, differentiate, and get further faster. Since you're here, we know you're the type of person that recognizes the importance of unlocking your innovation advantage so you can compete and win. And now, your host, the person that has worked with leading companies like Disney, Procter & Gamble, Arrow Electronics, the U.S. Army Research Labs, and Red Robin on upping their innovation advantage, Tamara Gontor.
Oh, hello, Launch Street. Hey, before we get into today's interview on reaching potential, I have a question for you. Actually, the question is, do you have a question for me? As many of you know, when I have free time, I like to do these burst of innovation webcasts. So it's 10 minutes on an innovation topic. Anyone can join me for a cup of coffee and some real innovation conversation. We dig in together. Lately, I've been coming up with a topic that I think is of high value to put to you, but I'm thinking it's time to flip it and let you ask me the questions ahead of time. I want to know what's on your mind. What burning questions can I help you with? What can I share that might help you bring more innovative ideas to your work and or have a stronger voice? Get those ideas heard. If you email me, I'll do my best to answer your questions the next time I go live. And I am more than happy to keep your name, company, et cetera, all of that totally anonymous. It's the question that matters because if you have it, so do others. There's a link with an email in the show notes. So if you've got something, you're like, hey, Tamara, help me with this situation where I always get shut down in this way, or help me with this. We have this challenge and we don't know how to look at it. Let me know. And by the way, if you're like, hey, I didn't even know you do these live webcasts on Zoom where people can join in and ask you questions and you have a topic, these coffees with Tamara, all you have to do to get notified is subscribe on our community. I send out an email in the mornings I do them, usually a couple hours before. They're very last minute. But you can do that on our website, which is a link in the show notes too. Now, in this interview, we delve into habits that are holding us back and the neuroscience that can help us reach our potential. Pradeep Sangha teaches men in business how to gain control of their lives and unlock their full income potential. Now, ladies, I just want to say that while Pradeep focuses on men in his work, what he teaches me in this interview applies to all of us. Believe me, I would not have launched it or I would not have done the interview if I didn't think so. Pradeep uses his proprietary neuroscience system to elevate minds, emotions, and energy to become limitless. All right, let's get to our full potential. Pradeep, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Tamara. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. So I have to know, what's your favorite innovative brand or business, and why do you love it so much?
So I'm gonna throw out one of the big ones out there, and there's so many innovative brands, but my favorite out of the big guys is really Tesla. And I love Tesla for one reason. It's because they really brought electric energy into the game. And where everybody else was so, you could say it was profit-driven. I'm not saying Tesla is not profit-driven, right? I want to be totally realistic here. But that technology was available for so long, but they really brought it mainstream. And I want to thank them personally, because I think what they've done is just, they blew the doors open and really in a short period of time have made such disruptive change and caused so many people to look at things differently and look at the way we impact the environment and how we do things in such a, I can't even explain the impact that they've had in less than a decade in terms of people thinking about electric vehicles and thinking about having electric homes and so forth. So that's pretty much the reason why I love Tesla.
You know, I love them as well for all the reasons that you said. And I find it fascinating that I find it fascinating for a couple of reasons, but one big one based on kind of what you're saying is that it really goes to show you what you can achieve when you do have a greater purpose in your work. So I agree. Of course, they're in it to make money at some point, but that's not really, at least my understanding, that's not really the driving purpose behind everything that they do. It's different. And with that, they will make money by being incredible at that.
Yes, absolutely. And I think the purpose is so important because it creates just a ripple effect for everybody just being more socially conscious about how we treat each other, how we treat the world. And for me, that's a big plus.
You know, it's funny. I'm pretty sure I've shared something similar to this on this podcast before, but if I have to go to the mall, which is really a have to, cause I have to go to the Apple store, usually is the case, Genius Bar, but there's a Tesla store in the mall by me. And I'm always fascinated by people's unbelievable enthusiasm to go play in a Tesla. You know, like there's just three cars in there. I don't think you could even buy it in there if you wanted to. I think it's just to play. But it's fascinating to me to watch how people respond to people who would probably never buy a Tesla on a regular, like they're not the early adopters that are going to do it now, maybe later, but they're still like, oh, it's a Tesla. Like even everybody knows what it's all about.
Yes, exactly. Their brand is just so big and so enormous. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it is. So speaking of passion and purpose, what makes you so passionate about, and you focus really on helping men, but in that, what makes you so passionate about helping them live their full potential?
Yeah, great. And so I do obviously open up my services sometimes to the occasional woman as well, just depending on her situation. But I work with men specifically because there's not that many resources out there for men that work on them specifically. And the work that I do is both from a business strategy perspective, but as well as an internal perspective, because here's what I've seen through my experience in studying not only business, but people for the last two decades, is that your business is a direct reflection of you and your internal state. So if you don't have your internal state aligned, whether you're a man or a woman, your business is not going to be aligned fully as well. So that's what I work on, the two components. And right now we have a lot of coaching out there. We have a lot of mentors out there. We have a lot of women-only groups, very few for men and very few effective ones for men, because the work that I do is really help them with their inside game as well as their outside game, but their inside game in particular, to really bring them to the level where they need to so they can perform and execute on the business strategies and tactics.
So you give me an example of, like if you were to describe the Bob who's not good on the internal state, kind of what he shows up like in his business versus John, I'm totally making these names up, obviously, but you know, whose internal state is really on fire and clicking, and what that looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really the structure that I use, the system that I use is really based on making better decisions and taking more effective action. And what ends up happening is that, let's just say John's the one that isn't really fully aligned when it comes to his thoughts or emotions, because we all have self-defeating thoughts and sometimes we have emotions that we're not even aware of. And what that does, it impacts our ability to make effective decisions and without sometimes even knowing it. So those subconscious beliefs, those subconscious emotions impact how we're making decisions and how we're taking effective action. And so there's tons of studies that are out there now with emotions and how it impacts your decision-making as well as your action-taking. And so the difference between John, for example, not being aligned, and Bob, who is fully aligned, is Bob will make better decisions more often and take more effective action. And therefore, he will get to his goal a lot faster and his business will be more successful. A lot of people think that it's the business strategies and tactics that have made these people like Elon Musk and the Jeff Bezos and all these big guys successful. No, it's actually a consistent level of making better decisions and taking more effective action.
So I totally hear you. And I think I've really personally experienced that when I got my internal state in check, things changed in my business world. So I'm going to ask I don't want to be assumptive. I'm going to ask the naive question because I want to break it down a little bit. How does that happen? Why is that so critical? Because I think sometimes we look at people and we think, I'm not even going to conjecture. I'm going to let you fill it in. But like, there's this gap between, like, yeah, I hear you. I know that's true, but why? Why does that matter so much?
So why are people not aligned, or how do they get aligned? Or why does it matter?
I'm not being clear, am I? Why does it matter? I want to get to how do you get aligned next.
Okay.
But I want to back up first and say, what is that? Because I think in theory we agree, right? When I'm together, when I'm with it, when I exercise, when I'm clear-headed, everything in work goes better. I know that. I get it instinctively, but how? How does that happen?
Well, and to simply put, is because the work that I do is really based on neuroscience and leadership psychology as well as mindfulness. So it's everything to do with the brain. And your brain is designed to do one thing. Well, actually, it's designed to do seven things. I can jump right into it. It's really designed to keep you safe. So keep you away from harm. It's designed to keep you away from disease. It's designed for you to find social affiliation. It's designed for you to find social status. It's they're designed for you to find a mate and then also keep a mate and then keep your kin, your children safe. Those are the seven things your brain is designed to do. It's not designed to make you successful. It's not designed to make you happy. It's not designed to do that. It's designed to really pass on the species. And so we are in a natural state. That's how the brain is designed. So if you're feeling that way, you shouldn't shoot yourself in the foot and feel all glum, because that's how your brain is designed. You just need to know how to take over and really control it, because it's just like a computer. The computer has hardware and the computer has software. Your brain, the physical organ, is the hardware. The thoughts are the software. So what you need to do is actually become the user of that computer rather than letting the computer program itself.
I want to go back to the first one you said for a second about safe, because I think a lot of us get stuck in a level of success that we're comfortable with, even though, and we can't get to the next level, even though we want to. So maybe I run a six-figure business and I want to get to $1 million, a seven-figure business, right? And then I sit there and I say, why can't I get to $1 million? But at the end of the day, the reality is I feel really comfortable at six figures, you know?
Yes. There's so many different factors, and it's the fear factor that really holds a lot of people back, or not having the clarity. You know, it's really important. There's three things I would say is a big component when it comes to that, is to overcome the fear of that. You have to have clarity. And the more clarity you have, the more confidence you will have. And you need confidence, because confidence is one of the biggest factors for action and taking effective action. And then you also need to have control, because then there's, I call them the three C's. You're going to have to take control because of your inner state, because at any given time, and I'm sure that the listeners out there have experienced that over and over again, you get sideswiped by things. You get sideswiped by whether it's a business challenge, a regulatory impact, or your family, your partner, your spouse, your kids, that throw you off your game. And the faster you can get back on or into the game, the faster you actually achieve your success. And actually you'll spend less energy, less time, less headaches when you actually do that.
So I want to go back to these seven. How do they mess with you? And then to your next thing, how do we take control over them to get to the success we're looking for?
Well, they mess with you because they're all subconscious. That's how they mess with you. Most people don't even realize that that's what they are designed to do. So that is the biggest reason why they mess with you, because the daily actions that you take are designed to do those seven things. And so what it really comes down to is you have to take a look at your daily habits and your daily patterns, because the majority of those are really based on those seven things. And they're all basically what I call, people are on autopilot to do these things. And it's not until you take control that you can actually really get above that. So hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. I find it really the brain is fascinating. And I think I've been doing a lot of reading and writing about the lizard brain, particularly when it comes to innovation, because the lizard brain wants to keep us safe, right? And it kind of filters out, and fight or flight kind of has a tendency to take over. And you had said a moment ago about sometimes we get kind of sideswiped by things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think that's where the lizard brain really hurts us, because it's like, run, run. And it's just a challenging question in the boardroom, but it feels like the tiger in the bushes.
Yeah, you know, our brain, to break it down psychology from a psychology perspective and a neuroscience perspective, it's really what they call the towards and away model, which is really you're designed to go towards the things that are beneficial and designed to run away from things that you fear are not beneficial. And so some of those things, or a lot of those things, were based on evolutionary patterns, right? And so we don't face those same challenges anymore. We don't have that same type of environment. We're in an age where things are really readily available, like food, for example, shelter. So we don't need to have the same fears, but we still do, because our brain is designed that way.
So I'm curious, I would love to get Pradeep, your perspective on this. One of the things that drives me bonkers, just you were talking about the brain and kind of hardwiring, is when people tell you to be fearless.
Yes.
Because fear, I think, and from what my research I've seen, is fear is hardwired into us. So how do we deal with that when it's part of our genetic makeup? Yet to your point, the things that we fear now are, I don't want to call them manufactured, but they're not life or death anymore for most of us.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So this is why I do the work that I do, because I think there's such fad out there when it comes to things like mindset or emotional intelligence and
dare to be fearless and step outside your comfort zone.
Exactly. Energy. And again, I've said, you know, this is your body. Everybody's body is an ecosystem, and it's an ecosystem of three things. It's an ecosystem of thoughts, emotions, and energy. That's how we experience life as humans. And it's not they're not separated. You cannot just think to be fearless. You have to feel that way, and you have to have the energy levels as well. And that's where a lot of people miss out. And that's why I see a lot of people reading books on mindless or fear, and they don't make any progress. It's because they haven't tackled the ecosystem. So in order to overcome fear, first of all, there's no way to not have fear. That's how your brain is designed. So I'm glad you brought that up. But there are strategies that you can take to overcome the fear. And that's why I mentioned the three C's. When you have more clarity, when you have more confidence, when you feel like you have more inner control. The key thing to remember is you need to overshadow the fear, because the biggest voice, this is how the brain works, the most consistent and the loudest voice in your brain wins.
Yeah.
That's how it is. And so you have to learn how to do that. But then there's also the energy component, which a lot of people don't talk about. And this is, again, your brain is, from a design perspective, we have two systems. We have a subconscious decision-making system and we have a conscious one. But if we are drained from work, for example, and I think this is very relevant to innovation, because to be very innovative, you have to have energy, because your brain consumes up to 20% of your daily calories. And if you don't have the health from a perspective of eating healthy, exercise, you won't be as effective in being innovative, because it's just the sheer level of energy that you need to have that your brain consumes.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was just having this conversation with someone the other day. Two things. One is that the fitter I've gotten, I went on a whole weight loss fitness journey in the last couple of years, and the fitter I got, the more energy I had for work. And it was fascinating. And it's so obvious, right, in some ways. As I say it out loud, I was like, of course you did, Tamara. But you don't really realize how lacking in energy you are until you start to see a change. And the other thing that I realized recently is, so I've been writing my new book and I've been exhausted. To your point about the brain taking so much energy, when we innovate, we are taking so much, our brain needs so much sometimes to really get out and think differently. I think on a regular basis, but when you're really doing something kind of outside of your normal. And I was like, why am I so tired? I thought maybe I was sick, but the minute I was done with that project, I was like, oh, okay, I'm good. But it kind of goes to what you were saying about energy. But I have a question for you about the ecosystem. Yes. How do you know in your own ecosystem? So thoughts, emotions, and energy. I really like kind of how you frame those three together. How do you know what's falling down and how to fix it?
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a really good question. So the fixing one is a little bit more complex, I would say. But how do you know? First of all, you know when you're off. Yeah. Every human being has an instinct. And so the biggest thing I tell people is awareness. It's really aware. And so, you know, if we get into the thoughts, for example, it's really tough to manage every single thought, because we have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. 47% of the time, they're off. We don't even have conscious control over them. They're just sideways, right? They're out in space somewhere and we have to pull them back. But the key thing to really take a look at, I would say, is focus on the emotions, because I'm not only going into innovation, but quality of life for people. Because we have five core emotions, and it's really important to really take a look and see, what are you feeling on a daily basis? Because how you feel is really the most important thing in life. Because again, that will relate back to innovation. If you're feeling on top of your game, you're going to have more energy. If you have more joy, you're going to have more energy. If you have more joy, you're going to be more innovative from that standpoint. Sometimes pain can actually make you more innovative as well, but it's important to focus on that. So what I do is, Tamara, just to really sum it up, is really put the information together out there, because awareness is important. And it's easy for someone to talk about this, but you have to understand, again, that it is an ecosystem, and that once you really break it down and you really take, I would say for most people, is take a look at your energy levels first. Do you have a lot of energy? Do you not? And then take a look at your emotions, and then take a look at your thoughts last. And then I would say start with that, because that's a great place to really focus on, because your energy, maybe it's a health perspective, like you mentioned, losing weight or exercise. Maybe it's you're not eating healthy. So take a look at energy first and then your emotional state, and then go down to your thoughts, because your emotional state is also determined by your thoughts as well.
Do you think in measuring your energy, you know, even if it's subjective, that it's just about, I'm so like active and I've got a spring in my step? Or are there other indicators such as, you know, I can't focus or I'm distracted all the time? I'm just curious how you measure it beyond just the whole, look at me, I'm so peppy.
Yeah. So let's differentiate that, because we see a lot of extroverted people, for example, right? So people that are jumping up and down, or they're the life of the party, that doesn't mean that they have more energy than you, right? So people's behaviors, personalities are different. It just means, yeah, can you function? Do you have the clarity in thought? Because a lot of people that have anxiety, for example, have a lot of stress, have that because they don't have enough energy. They're not eating healthy. They're not being proactive from a health perspective. And what does that do is you cause yourself stress because you don't have the energy levels, because you're not activating the second system of thinking, your system two, which is a conscious brain. You're constantly working off system one, which is what you referred to, is really your subconscious system. And so how do you measure it? You just feel more alive. And that doesn't really mean that, hey, look, you're at a party and you got, you know, you're jumping around.
And you're the chattiest person in the room.
Exactly. It just means, like, it's hard to explain, but for every person, it's different. And there's levels of emotion, because this house also has to tie into emotion as well. It's not just energy. Again, it's an ecosystem. It's really a level of emotion, because there's no point in having more energy if you're not feeling the emotions, right? You can drink 3 Red Bulls, but if you're not happy, there's no point.
Nobody wants to see me on 3 Red Bulls, I can tell you that. But I'm glad you mentioned that, though, because it was kind of the part of the reason I asked, is I think sometimes we mistake energy with that extrovert. So for someone like me, that's true, right? You'll know it because I'm chatty and I'm talking to everyone and I'm social. But for a very good friend of mine, even at his most energetic, he would say to me, like, this is a lot of fun. Like, that's just how he talks, right? But he means it. It's all on the inside.
Yeah. And there's a couple of other things to take a look at too, is really memory. For example, if you're not able to remember things, if you can't have clear thoughts, if you don't want to hang around with people, for example, or the things that you used to love to do, you're no longer doing, or even things like, hopefully I can mention on this though, but things like being intimate, having sex, those are all components of having the right levels of energy.
Yeah. Well, we could probably have a whole nother podcast on that, but I think intimacy in particular is one of those things that's an indicator of other things.
Yes,
for sure.
Exactly.
I want to go back. You just said really quickly about clear thoughts and memory, and that just kind of leads me also to being present.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things I've noticed, I've got a colleague who is just never quite always there. So she never remembers what we agree to or talk about, but I don't think it's because she has a memory issue. I think it's because her brain is never fully present. How important is that? I mean, and is that what you mean by clarity?
Yeah. Wow. I could talk about this for hours, because that's a really big component of the ecosystem and the energy levels, which is what I call modern mindfulness. And what ends up happening, I want people, and I think we got some pretty savvy listeners, I'm sure, is to understand this from a quantum mechanics or physics perspective. There is no future and there is no past. The only time it exists is in our minds. We're living in a continuous moment of now. So what does that mean? That means that the only time that you have impact and maximum power or energy in your life is at this moment, is really in the present state, what I call the here and now. What a lot of people do, and I've been guilty of it, I'm guilty of it continuous, but I have to bring myself back, I'm aware of it, is that we're constantly thinking about the past, or we're thinking about the future, or we're thinking about some other place that's not even right, we're not even in right now. What that does, if you think about this, you have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day. Let's just say, I'm going to say this is a low number. Even 40% of those thoughts are about the past or the future. You've already diluted that energy.
Wow.
And that energy is required for memory. That presence is required for memory, because there's called a thing called working memory. And that's that little holding ground. It's like a little holding pool of your present moment ideas, thoughts, and experiences that really go into long-term memory. Now, if you're not even present within that pool, you're not going to be able to develop those long-term memories.
It kind of reminds me of my cell phone, where when the apps have stuff going on in the background, the battery is draining. and yes. I'm not even using it and I can't figure out why. And I think sometimes kind of what you're saying reminds me of that with us as humans, that we're draining ourselves quietly in the background and don't even know it. And we're really not present for the conversation.
Yeah. Either. And you know, this is a whole other topic because of, from a technology standpoint, because there's so much neuroscience coming out about this when it comes to smartphones, the impacts on brains and how it's disrupting neural patterns. It's actually making people dumber because they're so multitasking these days that it's actually disrupting how people think. And honestly, the attention span has dramatically decreased. And I'm so surprised that people are able to become innovative or be innovative these days because of the level of attention spans of some people. It's really interesting.
Yeah, the latest studies I saw said that our attention span is 8 seconds.
Yes.
So which was down from what, 13 or 15, which seems like forever now. And if I count to 8, I'll get distracted at 6.
Yes.
Kind of sad. But, and it's funny, you know, I was talking to someone the other day about the podcast and I said, well, don't bother texting me tomorrow. I'm not looking at my phone. And they said, well, can't you just look at it when the other person's talking? I thought, well, I mean, I could certainly, if there was an emergency, I could certainly get to my phone while you were, talking, but then I could never really listen to what you were saying and actually respond. But you're right. We're so trained to just multitask all the time.
Yes. It's the easiest way to lose energy.
Yeah.
With cognitive and bodily energy.
Yeah. So I'm curious when potential clients call you to work with you, what challenge are they facing that makes them realize I need to work with someone or I need to get help? What are their, I'm just kind of curious because I think it's probably very relatable to myself and our listeners of the situations that they face.
Yeah. The things that they're looking for, I can tell you, is really the 3 C's that I talked about. They're looking for more clarity. So if they want to grow their business or grow their income, they want to know how. And so that's the biggest question. And then they need more confidence because that's the thing that stops people is the lack of confidence. And so they want to know how do they build up more confidence. And these aren't people that have a self-confidence issue. They just need a little bit more confidence to really overcome that initial hump, to really go through the process. And they understand to a certain degree when they, and usually it's when they've listened to some of my stuff, you can say, that they realize that, and here's the difference between awareness and understanding. Most people realize that they're their biggest challenge, but they don't fully understand it. There's a big difference. There's a big cognitive difference between awareness and understanding. Understanding is when you have that aha moment and you say, I got it.
So it's fascinating that you say that because yesterday I was listening to a podcast or an interview that someone recommended to me, where a brilliant man who made a lot of money. And one of the things he said to me, like he was speaking to me directly on the podcast, was there's a big difference between acting as an operator and acting as an owner. And I found myself like nodding in agreement, like I get it. But then I had this moment of, well, now what do I do with that information? Like I know to grow my business, I need to be an owner, not an operator. Oh no. Like now what? Is that kind of what you're saying about that difference?
Yes. It's an aha moment. And the most important thing to remember is when you have that aha moment is to take one immediate step towards that aha moment. So it could have,
for you, example,
it could have been just looking up, how do I become a business owner versus operator? And just actually finding out whether there's a coach out there, whether there's a blog or whatever that is, just to keep the process going. Because again, it's easy to have those aha moments, but the whole purpose is to really continue that journey and to continue it and actually take one more step. And so when you commit to taking one more step, you will actually commit to taking another step. So that's the key, is that I tell people when you make a decision, take an immediate action towards that decision. So someone says, hey, look, yeah, you know what? I probably should try to sell to that person. I say, well, book a call. I want right now, I want you to either call them or I want you to book it in your calendar that you're going to call them.
When you say it that way, it sounds so obvious. Like, oh, just a step. Actually, let me say that. It sounds so easy.
Yeah.
I'll just do that. And I just wrote down, look up owner operator blogs. This has got to be out there somewhere.
Yeah.
Cause I think that happens to a lot of us, to your point. So they pick up the phone, they call you, they took a first step.
Yes.
What do you do with them? How do you go from point A to point Z? And maybe if you have a client case study that you can actually share with us, just to kind of walk us through your process a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. The first conversation is really casual, and it's really getting to know the person in terms of what they're trying to achieve and what they feel is holding them back. And it's really what you understand this from an innovation perspective, what people believe is holding them back is really not what's holding them back. So my first job in that first call is really get to the root cause in terms of what's holding them back. And when they realize that, and for most people, here's what it comes down to. It's the stories they tell themselves. And so I show them, and it's even in that first call, they will present themselves to me probably at least a half a dozen stories that they've created. And each time I will show them that that's a story, and they'll be like, oh yeah, you're totally right. Because in that story, only 5 to 10% of that is probably actually factual. The rest is just made up based on the beliefs that they have, who they think they are, their situation, their circumstances.
So before you go on, will you give me an example of some of those, or the top examples, some of those stories that we tell ourselves that are not the real stories and what those are?
Yeah, for example, so some people say, here's a prime example. I'll just give this one. I cannot be an owner, for a business owner, for example, because I just don't have the money to hire someone to take over.
Yes, great one.
Right? So that is a story that they tell themselves. And so that's not the real root cause majority of the times. The root cause is they're just afraid to let go of the reins. Right? And they're afraid, and they'll create whatever story it is. I don't have enough time or money to do it. You know, people don't have the expertise that I have. My clients like talking to me. I'm really good at this. All of that stuff is a story that they've created. And so the important thing to remember here is when we have two stories that we tell ourselves, we have empowering stories and disempowering stories. Every person does that. And so we have to choose, and we can easily choose because the facts don't change. The facts are still the same. That's the really cool part about this, is that the facts will still stay the same, but you can take a disempowering story and turn it into an empowering story. So, hey, I don't have time to do this can turn into, well, how do I make the time to do this? It's so simple, but it's just those stories.
So how do you, and maybe this delves a little bit into the science of it, how do you trick your brain, for lack of a better way to say it, into believing your switch in the story? Because it seems to me that sometimes, so let's take the disempowering one. I don't have the money to hire people. Actually, I'm going to take one a little bit more general because we've got entrepreneurs too.
Yes.
I am not going to share my brilliant idea because there's no way they're going to go for it anyway. Right? That's one I hear all the time. Like, the world won't love whatever it is I want to put out there, right? Nobody's going to like it, whether that's a leadership or the marketplace.
Yeah.
If I've been telling myself that for 5 years or longer, how do I flip it and still believe it? Because sometimes, I just had this conversation with this incredible woman who you would love. Her name is Dana Wild. She has this book called Train Your Brain. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about the fact that, like, you can say these affirmations, but the challenge is your brain's like, you know, it's like nagging you in the back and be like, no, you don't.
Yes. And the reason why that doesn't work is because they're just doing it at one level. That's why I mentioned thoughts, emotions, and energy. That is a reason why people do not get the change. Because people, again, neuroscientists will focus on this, and then we'll have people on emotional intelligence will focus on this, and then we'll have mindfulness experts. Everybody's doing it separately. It's bringing it all together. And so that bringing it all together is what I call self-mastery, which is mastering your mind, your emotions, and your energy to really get the results that you want from your life. That's self-mastery. And if you think about it from a pyramid perspective, and there's different layers in the pyramid. The very bottom, so I'm just going to quickly go through this. The very bottom is self-mastery. On top of that is your stories. From your stories, you make decisions. And then from those decisions, you take action. And the ultimate at the top, the pinnacle, is really the outcomes. But the foundation needs to be the self-mastery. And you ask that question, why are people telling themselves that story? Well, you know, there's 9 overall components. You know, it'd take me a couple hours to go through this, but I just want to simply focus on a couple here when it comes to self-mastery. So our thoughts, let's just take a look at one component, which is your mind. One of the biggest things in our minds is our identity. And our identity is who we think we are. And our brain will only think and act in alignment with who we think we are. So most of us have not given us...
Before you keep going, who we think we are is who we've decided we are.
Or society has.
Okay.
And I think that's the most important thing, because most people are now trained. There's a genetic component as well, right? Science has shown that as well. And there's also a big social component. So we are shaped by the people around us. Ever since we are kids, up until the time we're 8 years old, we pretty much have created our own identity and the way we see the world. And for a lot of people, it doesn't evolve after that unless they do it consciously, which is really scary because we're operating our businesses or our careers as an eight-year-old in a lot of respects.
Right, yeah.
And what ends up happening, though, is if we don't give ourselves an identity, and I'll give you myself an example, because I had to create my own identity. And so my identity is I'm a visionary. I see the possibility. I'm a leader. I bring people together towards a common vision. And I'm a driver because I get results. Those are the three components of my consistent identity. And every single thing I do is based on those three things because I've created that. Most people have not created their identity. That's the first standpoint. Out there listening, I'm saying this because of the experience and the science behind this, you can create the person you want to be. And it starts with identity. The next component is values. Because not only do you have to have the identity, you have to have the values, because your values will determine your daily actions. So I encourage everybody to write down your top 10 values, the values that you think you have and the values that you need to have to be in alignment with the identity that you've created. So what kind of values would, for example, a visionary need? What kind of values would a leader need, right? Or a driver need? Yeah. Those are the three things. So when it comes back to the example that you use, someone that doesn't want to share their ideas because they, you know, who's going to take them seriously, it's because at the core identity level, they don't think of themselves as someone that might have valuable ideas, for example.
Mm. Right.
Or they could have they might not have the value. One of the values could be, hey, well, regardless, you know, I'm a communicator, for example, or whatever it might be. You have to have the values to be able to share that information as well.
So that was the two of them. There's a third, right? Or did you catch?
Oh yeah. No, sorry. And from the mind perspective, there's also filters, and that goes, that's also, that goes back to how you view things. And we have things that we see things through a lens. That's how you can pretty much take a look at it. We have thousands of these different lenses, like different glasses. And you can say the thing that we're looking at remains the same, but how we're looking at it changes based on those lenses. And those lenses, again, have been developed up until the time you're pretty much 8 years old, based on how you were raised by your parents or whoever it was, the school that you went to, your friends, TV, all of that stuff has really created those glasses for you, those lenses. And so what every person needs to do, and I continuously do that, is every time I come up with a situation that might be unfavorable or challenging, I say, what lens am I looking at this through? Is this a lens that is really empowering me? Or is this a lens that I've created when I was a child? Is it even valid? And sometimes we just have to strip ourselves of that lens and throw it away because it's no longer current.
So this is so fascinating. So I'm taking copious notes as you're talking. What you were just saying, so the identity, the values, and the filters, that's really at the self-mastery level, right, of your building blocks?
That's one component. That's
one component, okay.
That's the mind component.
Got it. So I love it. And I think this is an exercise that we should all be doing. And I want to go up a level for a second too, because you said, make sure I get it right, self-mastery, then stories, then decisions, and then outcomes.
Actions and then outcomes.
Actions. Sorry, I missed one. Yes. Thank you. Okay, actions and outcomes. I want to make sure we get it right. So I want to go to that next level of stories to decisions.
Yes.
And how stories impact decisions. Because I think when you said that, my eyes lit up a little bit, because to me, that is where a lot of stuff breaks down for a lot of us. And I don't think we realize how much impact our stories have on what we think and the decisions that we make every single day.
Yeah. It has everything to do with the decisions that you make. Every single thing that you do is based on the story you tell yourself. Because, and again, let's get into, you know, we could talk into the science. The reason why we watch movies is because what ends up happening is we put ourselves in that story. That's how our mind is designed. We automatically start living that story. So our brain loves stories. And so we create our own story. We are a character in our own story. But we also have the power to change that story. We also have the power to make it in a negative way or a positive way, empowering way or disempowering way. But all of those stories, and I'll give you an example. Yesterday I was working with a client that was talking about changing his business model. And we were going through and he said, well, okay, I get, and he came to me with this idea and I said, great. And I said, so what do you think? He's like, well, I'm a little bit unsure. Maybe I'll do it this way. I said, here's what the thing you need to remember when making this decision. What story are you going to tell yourself? What is the identity that is behind that story? Are you talking, because he wanted to hit, let's just say a $10 million mark, a year revenue. I said, are you talking as a owner of a $10 million business? Or is that the story that you're basing it on? Or are you basing it on a story of a $2 million business owner? And then, you know, his eyes just kind of lit up. He said, you're absolutely right. So the stories that we tell ourselves, the characters in our story are so important, because a lot of the times we look at people in our lives and we say, that person's holding me back. Well, that might be true in some aspects, but maybe it's a story that you've created yourself. Maybe you can change that story to say, maybe that person is causing me to grow and gain more skills so I can deal with further adversity. Just that change and switch in a story can totally transform not only an intimate relationship, it can change your work environment, it can change anything in your life.
That would probably change my relationship with my ex. So on a personal level, I'm glad you said that. But to bring it back to business for a second,
yes,
because I think it's really fascinating what you're saying. And like I can envision if I were to go into a really important meeting, whether that's buy-in internally or maybe an investor pitch, because I'm trying to grow my business. If I went in with a story of my product or my business, my idea is 100% worth it and is worth the $10 million that I'm asking for, and you know, whatever the fill in the blank on that story, that's a very, not just does it affect my confidence, because I think that we all understand that, like, oh, I'm going to stand tall and have a power pose and I'm going to speak with confidence. But if I hear you right, it also might impact how I think about the presentation and how I put together, what I focus on talking about. Completely. Who I choose to meet with, you know, to get that money from.
Completely. It's the difference. And I work with people all the time on this, because there's people out there that just don't like to sell. They have a great product. They just don't like to sell. It's just that's changing that story. Because here's what I say. I say, if you had the cure for cancer, would you be hesitant? And every answer is no.
Of course not.
Absolutely not. So now they've switched and they can say, okay, well, I know my product is good. Now I just need to tell myself a different story. My product is awesome. And then they take a look at things from a completely different perspective. And here's another thing. When it comes to your sales pitch, for example, and I'm going to get into the quantum mechanics and the quantum physics of this, because majority of who we are as people in our life and our environment, everything is 99% space and energy. And there's quantum physics that has proven that. So what does that mean? That means that we're walking, talking blobs of energy. And that means that every time we communicate, or even verbally or even non-verbally, there's a transfer of two things, emotions, there's a transfer of energy and information. That's how the universe works. That's how we work as people, as human beings. And that's how emotions work as well. When you have more clarity when it comes to your stories, when you have more confidence when it comes to your stories, and you walk into a room, there's a literal transfer of energy that's happening between you and the people that you're pitching to. Because you've probably experienced this, and I'm sure a lot of people out there have as well, that you may have come across a person or individual that was selling you something or doing something or whatever it was that you were totally gravitated towards. And you wanted to buy from it, whatever that was, just based on the energy that that person had.
Yeah, totally. And others that I felt the opposite about.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I wish we had a lot more time, because I would love to just kind of work up the chain. Then from decisions, I mean, I think decisions to actions and actions to outcomes is a little bit more obvious, although I think the impact is just as great. But I think the stories is where we get stuck. And I think particularly when it comes to innovation, the story that I hear a lot from people that we're working hard to shift is that story of, well, I'm not innovative, right? I just get my work done. I don't have a creative bone in my body. I don't, you know, fill in the blank. And part of that is because I think particularly in our education system, but also at work, we are rewarded for the right answer, not for the process we got to the answer. And it's just over time, you start to believe that, you know, you're not the innovative one. And then you look in the media and, you know, Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Beyonce, and those guys are amazing. And we're supposed to follow their routines and their, how they dress and their eating habits and egg whites and whatever. But the reality is the story that we tell ourselves every day around that is really hindering our ability to be innovative, even though it's a natural part of being human.
Yeah. And what ends up happening is this is, again, this is why I say the your internal world creates your external world. Without a shadow of a doubt, because when you start to tell yourself that story, you behave in that way and your environment reacts in that way. The people around you react in the exact same way that you think you are from a story perspective. And that perpetuates it. It supports your story because they're reacting to you in terms of exactly how you think you are.
So if I change how I think I am, they have no choice but to change how they see me because it's a shift in energy.
Exactly.
So interesting. Okay. Before I like I said, I could keep going. Before we kind of close out, where can people go to learn more and connect with you?
Yeah, great. So if this is for guys and gals out there, because I have a lot of women listening to my podcast, you can go to malepodcast.com. And the podcast is called The Male Entrepreneur, a podcast for men who win. Or you can go to PradeepSangha.com.
Got it.
Well, I was just going to say, or you can follow me at social media is great at Pradeep Sangha on Facebook. Or Instagram and LinkedIn.
We will put all those links in the show note. And actually, before we close out, I want to ask you one more question that I wrote down that I want to go back to because you were using the example earlier of like, you know, the story of someone who owns a $1 million business versus coming from the story of owner of a $10 million business. Yes. Will you just very quickly give me a highlight? What would that different story be at those different levels? I want to see the difference.
In terms of the story itself?
Yeah.
Well, at a $1 million level, for example, a person might not take as much risk. A person might, so that's basically a big difference in his story, for example, because his story was just different. I'm at $1 million, $2 million, I've been making this much. And you know what? If I want to get to $10 million, for example, is that going to take time away from my family? Mm. Is that going to cause me to have less personal time, right? Those are all stories.
And then at $10 million,
well, at 10 million, they're already thinking, well, I've created the systems so I can have more freedom. I can have more time with my family. So they're already there and they've already created the system for it. A lot of the times our stories are things that we've created that haven't even happened yet. So you have to think as if it's already happened and make decisions based on that.
So I read a stat the other day that 85% of what we worry about never actually comes to fruition.
It never does. And there's this great saying.
How exhausting.
Yeah, there's this great saying by an ancient Chinese philosopher. It was, a warrior dies but once and a coward will die 1,000 times. Mm-hmm.
It's well said. You're always worrying about things. All right, I got us off track a little bit, but I wanted to make that distinction very clear to people of it's not just, ooh, I've gone from I have 1 million to 10, but there's actually a very clear distinction in how you think about the things that you're doing.
Yes.
And everything around you. Okay. So Pradeep, this has been great. What's your final piece of advice for innovators out there looking to, I'm going to say this a little bit generally, maybe to improve their ecosystem. I like how you said that in the beginning.
Yeah. I would just say the understanding is the most important thing is really take time to educate yourself on this. Because this will literally change your life. It will not just your career or your business, it will change your personal life as well. Because I'm a firm believer that we are put on this earth for a reason and we live this, you know, you might believe in reincarnation or karma, but this form in one lifetime. And so you have every opportunity because I've seen it. I've seen both men and women really transform their lives just by focusing on this. And so it's business and life and all that kind of stuff is not an external game. It's an inside game. It's an internal game. And once you master that, wow, all the stuff that used to be tough becomes easy.
You know, it kind of loops back to what you're saying in the very beginning. These people that we revere for their breakthroughs, their successes, really, if you look at what they're truly successful at, it's the internal game. And that allowed for everything else. I think you said that in the beginning. And I heard this, just to kind of close it out, a great quote on a podcast I was listening to yesterday, where he said, hell on earth is meeting the man you could have become or should have become.
Should have, yes.
I thought that was brilliant. I was like, oh, that would be horrible. Like to live a mediocre life and then meet the Tamara that was, you know, I could have been. Oh,
Yes, absolutely.
That would be sad. Pradeep, thank you so much for joining me today. That was very insightful.
Thank you so much. I truly appreciate the opportunity to share this message with your listeners.
Thanks for hanging with us on Inside Launch Street. If you know someone that is truly ready to unlock their innovation advantage, have them join you on Launch Street. Discover your innovation advantage. Build a team of high-performing innovators and ignite ideas and solutions that create massive impact. GOTO, launchstreet.com. Remember, innovators, if you don't take the leap, somebody else will.